Yes, you older folks that are listening or watching, we do miss you having here. I'm reminded of the 3+ years that Deborah and I had spent in Harrison, Arkansas. The oldest church people were Willie and Edna, and they were in their lower 50s, like 50 to 52, 3. And all the rest of us were younger. But yeah. And I do appreciate having an audience to preach to this morning instead of just Dave and Tyler back there. I prefer this. Well, it is Mother's Day, and I have over the years preached a few Mother's Day messages. 2 years ago, I preached a message entitled Woman by Design. And so today I am not going to necessarily focus exactly on motherhood as much, but I am going to focus a little bit on parenting and also lift out motherhood somewhat. Parenting is a big job. You children, you'll find out someday what you're putting us through. But I'd like to notice and recognize that researchers have concluded that the first 5 years of a child's life are extremely important. Characters are basically formed by the age of 5. And so if your child will be sweet or selfish, will it be a bully or soft-hearted? Whatever, you fill in the blank. It's often kind of formed by that age. And they also tell us that mother is the most influential person in a preschooler's life. So put the two together, mothers. Don't want to put a big burden on you or anything, but there you go. And they say that fathers are more influential later in a child's life, but the first years are especially important. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest lessons I have learned were at my mother's knees. All that I am or hope to be, I owe to my angel mother." So I've titled the message this morning, let me see if we got connection here. On arrow. Do we got connection, Tyler? Eventually. I've entitled it "The Law of Thy Mother." And I get it from two text verses in, I think we got a weak battery here. I think we must have a weak battery. Tyler, what are you got a battery back there for this thing? No? Wow. Okay. Bear with us today. Proverbs 1:8, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother." And Proverbs 6:20, "My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother." So that's where I get my title from. I invite you to turn to Exodus chapter 2. I'd like to look at a mother this morning, first of all, here. And this is the account of Moses as a baby, account of Jochebed. Moses, Exodus chapter 2, let's read verses 1 through 10. "And there was a man of the house of Levi, and took a wife to daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took him for him an ark of bulrushes, and daubed it with slime and pitch, and put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself in the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." Thank you, Glenn. All right. If you look at this account, you notice, and by the way, the setting, of course, is that Pharaoh had commanded all the baby boys. If you look at chapter 1, verse 22, and Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, "Every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive." So when Moses was born, his parents saw this as a special child. I don't know how they knew that. I had five special ones. But have five special ones. And yeah. There was something about him, and so they hid him for 3 months, and then when they could no longer hide him, the mother, it seems to be her plan here, builds this little ark for Moses and puts him in there, and I think she had crafted a plan. She knew very full well that Pharaoh's daughter would come to the river. I'm sure she did. Set Moses' sister Miriam there to watch to see what would happen. And, of course, arranged it all, and so it happened. Seems to be like the mother was in charge here. And I don't know how long she had Moses. The Bible doesn't tell us. But I would not be surprised she had him for 3 or 4 years. Back in those days, a nursing mother, as they said it, could last several years. So I would not be surprised that she did. But at some point, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. Josephus tells us that Moses became a general in Pharaoh's army, even led a campaign against Ethiopia. Don't know, of course, if that can be backed up by any other source than Josephus. I don't think it can. But he does tell us that. But we do know that Moses was schooled in the ways of Egypt. If we go to this account in Acts, this is Stephen the martyr speaking when he's on trial. Acts 7, 18 to 22, "Then another king who knew nothing about Joseph became ruler of Egypt. He dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our forefathers by forcing them to throw out their newborn babies so that they would die. At that time Moses was born, he was no ordinary child. For 3 months he was cared for in his father's house. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action." Folks, when I think about Moses, I don't think about a man that is powerful in speech and action. But history, evidently, as Stephen's recounting, history would have told their people that he must have been. He was, as his first 40 years, he was a powerful person. And Egypt was known for its scholarship. Historians tell us that the first known alphabet was indeed produced by the Egyptians already about 2,000 years before Christ, which is 500 years before Moses. They were scholarly people, educated people. Their writings, the most ancient writings are Egyptian writings that we have today. They were culturally elite. And they might have been military powerful, I'm not sure, but we do know, of course, that the 10 plagues took care of that. Also, if you are still in Exodus 2, if you go to verse 16 in Exodus 2, you have the account of when Moses fled, and he meets up with the priest. Now, the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. And when they came to Reuel, their father, he said, "How is it you are coming so soon today?" And they said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock." And he said unto his daughters, "And where is he? And why is it that ye have not left that ye have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread." And so Moses was culturally an Egyptian. He looked like an Egyptian. He did not look like a Hebrew. He looked like an Egyptian. And the priest of Midian, or the priest, or some are known as the perhaps the ruler. There's another word. I can't come up with it right now. The prince of Midian might be a better way to say it. His daughters recognized him as an Egyptian. But in his heart, Moses became a Hebrew. Or he was a Hebrew. And I'd like for you to think of this picture. You think of Moses on his mother's knees as a young child, and then being educated in a pagan, worshiping, heathen household and culture. Mothers, if you knew you had your child till the age of 4, and then that child was going to go into a heathen culture and home, think you'd pull out all the stops? Sure you would. And I'm thinking Jochebed did it. And I'm thinking that when Moses, educated as he was, learned as he was, that there was something in the back of his mind that went back to those very influential early years that shaped his character. And we have these words in Acts 7, again, Stephen. "And when he was fully 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that he was oppressed and smote the Egyptian." Hebrews 11 tells us this: "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward." I'm just saying, folks, I think that a huge, huge reason that this came to Moses at the age of 40 was because of his first years with his mother. I really think it is that way. And so I give that as an example. Mothers of preschoolers, you've got a huge opportunity and a huge blessing to shape your child. You know, it did take Moses left Egypt in a hurry, but I think it took 40 years to get Egypt out of Moses. I think that's why God had him there for 40 years. And then at age 80, perhaps when all the pride and all that was gone, that was indoctrinated into him the arrogance as being the son of Pharaoh's daughter was gone, and he became a man that God could use. Well, God's pattern for parents. I'm going to make it very simple here this morning. I got 3 points only, parents. Just 3. We'll keep it pretty simple. But let's go to our text verses again. Proverbs 1:8. My son, hear the instruction of thy father. Forsake not the law of thy mother. And my son, forget, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. What do you see there? I see instruction. I see law. I see commandment. And so the Proverbs writer, Solomon is obviously assuming, parents, that there is law, that there's commandment, that there is instruction. And so point number one is simply that there is law for parents. There is instruction, there is teaching, there is training. And it's just this simple. It's a fact of life. You raise children without law, you'll probably raise lawless children. It's a fact of life. That children need to learn the word no. Are you listening, children? You need to learn the word no. There needs to be instruction. There need to be boundaries. Have to be boundaries in a child's life. Because as they learn boundaries from mom and dad, it'll make it so much easier as adults to submit to other, many other boundaries that society puts around them. Much, much easier. There's a verse here in Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I'm told that the picture here is a picture of a tree that has those guy wires. So you plant that young tree, and you put those guy wires in place. I don't know what the correct term is. I call them guy wires, but I don't know what the correct term is. You put those in place for that young tree. And as that tree grows, the tree becomes stronger. And eventually you don't need those wires anymore because it's standing straight. And that's the picture of Proverbs 22:6. And of course, a proverb is a proverb that's talking about this is a general rule. This is generally how it happens. And so the truth is, generally, you leave a child to its own with no guidelines, no instruction. Generally, it'll go wherever it wants to. That's a general proverb. And so it is important, parents, that there is law, that there is commandment, that there is instruction. And there is a lot of instruction. In fact, Proverbs. Just go through Proverbs. And if you go through Proverbs and you read so many things about wine and women, for one thing, and just so many other things that are in there, and you teach those things to your sons and daughters, that it is ingrained in them. Ephesians 6:1-3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first command with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. What I want you to notice here, children and parents, is that this is a very positive command. Very positive. We look at obedience and honoring as negative at times. Absolutely not. That it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long on the earth. Very, very positive command. Deuteronomy 11:19, and you shall teach them, your children, this is talking about the God's commandments, speaking to them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And yes, parents, the best, by far the best teaching and training is by example. Yes, your words are important, but by example, the way you live your life will teach a lot. Secondly, point number two is discipline. So there's law and there is discipline. We go back to the garden when Adam and Eve disobeyed, there were consequences. And I'd like for you to think about it in this way, parents. It's not punishment. It's consequences. God didn't send them out of the garden as punishment, but as consequences for their choices. And that is discipline. And when you view it that way, that a positive action has positive consequences, a negative action has negative consequences. So again, Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him at times. 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 23:13-14, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. Proverbs 19:15-17, the rod of reproof giveth wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. 17, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. So again, discipline is a positive thing, should be a positive thing. And I realize that in today's culture, spanking is not politically correct. And I would just take you to what God's word says. Your son won't die. He'll be fine. Somehow God made our anatomy with a perfect spot that it burns, but it doesn't hurt, okay? Doesn't injure, I should say. It hurts, but it doesn't injure. And I'd like to ask God if he made it that way on purpose, but anyhow. I would like to say we don't have to listen to the politically correct people. God has some wisdom here for us. And yes, spanking should be rare if done correctly. My wife and I had a little discussion about this. I thought ours was pretty rare, and she thought, no, she did a lot. So I don't remember. But I was blessed when we asked our children. They don't remember that many. They were young. But yes. And of course, there are other measures of discipline. Absolutely. Timeout has its place, and taking away privileges has their place. Absolutely. There are different ways of discipline. But I think it was John MacArthur. I heard him say this, that he thinks he only spanked his child one time for lying, because when he got done spanking him for lying, they decided they will not lie again to him. That sounds pretty good. I don't know if that was quite my case. All right. But this is true for all aspects of life. Hebrews 12:9-11. Moreover, we have had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. And of course, this is talking about spiritual discipline for us as adults, but it certainly, you can certainly apply this to discipline of a child, that it will produce a harvest, a positive, positive harvest. And this verse from Proverbs 3:12, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father, the son in whom he delighteth. So discipline should be viewed as correction, training, as guidance. It's an extension of the laws that you have set for your household. So point number three is love. 3 points: law, discipline, and love. And of course, there are many, many more points, but I want to keep it simple here this morning and simply give us these. Ephesians 6:4, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. NIV says it this way: fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Similarly, in Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. NIV, fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will be discouraged. Again, we see the first point here about instruction, but I also see the third point in here, in that fathers, in your child training, it needs to be with love. If it's not, you will exasperate your children. You will provoke your children to anger. Because when we discipline in anger, and I would say to my shame that I think I did, and that you should never discipline in anger. If you are angry, give yourself a timeout first before you do your discipline. But if you do so, or if you set unreasonable standards for your children, you can exasperate them. Or if you are inconsistent, by your own example, you expect this from your child, but you don't do that. Those types of things. You can exasperate, you can embitter your children. And I think that comes from a lack of genuine love. And interestingly enough, the Apostle Paul thought it necessary to tell mothers that they teach the young women, this is older women, to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. Now, there is certainly an aspect of loving your child that is absolutely automatic. I mean, I think so. I don't know if there's a parent here this morning that didn't see their newborn child and their heart didn't just go out to that child. I remember 27 years ago seeing my son up in that bassinet for the first time, and whoa, that is my child. And there's something that happens in here. You're going to protect that child. You're going to look out for that child. That is my flesh and blood. It's mine. And there is an aspect of love that is just absolutely God-given, natural. But there's also an aspect of love that is developed, that is learned, that is taught by God Himself. And here Paul is instructing older women to teach younger women to love their husbands, that may be difficult at times, and to love their children. And so why? Because it's important. It's extremely important that they love their children with genuine love. And that love, of course, is not just a feeling. It is a decision of the will. And part of that love is the other points that I just talked about. So, again, this verse first. Proverbs 13:24, he who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. So these three points. Parents, you need law, you need discipline, and you need love. Yesterday as I was wrapping this up, I said, well, it's kind of unfortunate that I have two L's and one D. So I revised it, and I have three L's. I have law, lashing, and love. So maybe you can remember the three L's this way. Law, lashing, and love. Back to Earth. Wrap up with these quotes about mother. The mother's heart is the child's schoolroom, Henry Ward Beecher. Mothers possess a power beyond that of a king on his throne, Mabel Hale. And no man is poor who has a godly mother, Abraham Lincoln. Mothers, you have a big job. Fathers, you have a big job. But as we heard in the devotional, and other comments, God is with us, regardless of the job that God calls us to. He's with us, he will instruct us, and he will guide us. And we can go in his strength. Let's pray. Father God, at the close of this service, we thank you for your instructions in your word. Thank you that we have it and we can read it. And most of all, we would pray for the strength and the wisdom to follow your word. I pray for each parent here today, especially parents of young children, that you would give them the grace, the wisdom, the power they need from you to give their children instruction, discipline as needed, and all the love that they can. Would you bless them in that? Guide us as we go from here. We bless your name. Amen.